Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. We open our show today with a report from Public News Service on the latest from the presidential campaign trail. Find out which candidate released tax returns and what's in them, and which one is refusing to release tax records. Next up, we'll have some good news for East County residents. An arsonist responsible for at least 5 fires over the past couple of years has been convicted, and we'll have details. On our Green Scene report, find out why environmentalists are urging La Mesa residents concerned about climate change to attend an important meeting coming up this week and another one in September. We also have a happy ending to a story about a search for a missing horse in the mountains of East County, an amazing animal survival story thanks to the efforts of community volunteers. There's a recall of halal meats sold in retail outlets in California, and we'll have more information for you on just which products you should avoid eating. Local firefighting forces just got a much-needed boost from SDG&E, and we'll have the details for you today. Plus, we also have a very special presentation prepared by one of our student volunteers, Chisato Everson. Chisato visited an exhibit at the La Mesa Historical Society on Japanese-American students from Grossmont High School who were sent to internment camps during World War II. The original music you'll hear was created by Chisato's mother. Hear Chisato's interview also with a local historian who finds troubling parallels between what happened to Japanese Americans back then and what she fears could happen again due to the inflammatory anti-immigrant rhetoric being heard on the presidential campaign trail today. Then from Public News Service, we'll have a report on a major decision made by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency on marijuana enforcement, plus reactions from medical marijuana advocates and opponents of marijuana legalization on that decision. Now, if you live in the Helix Water District and you're fed up with water rate hikes, you'll want to listen in today to our interview with two candidates running for that board, Mark Grasick and Dan McMillan, who both say they're opposed to recent rate hikes and they want to work to roll them back if they're elected. Now, as of our taping time, the Registrar of Voters had not updated its site to show if other candidates may have filed at the last minute for those seats, but we will be checking back and inviting any other candidates, including the incumbents, John Linden and Chuck Muse, who voted for those big rate hikes, to come on our show and share their views with our listeners. The National Weather Service is predicting another heat wave this week, so we'll have some information for you today on where you can find cool zones across East County. And finally, we'll have a warning for you on why you should always call 811 before you decide to dig on your property. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to the Public News Service. I'm Brandon Campbell. On Friday, Democrats Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine released their tax returns, which is putting some pressure on Republican Donald Trump to make his own returns public. The big reveal from Mrs. Clinton and her husband, former President Bill Clinton's returns, show the couple earned about $10 million last year. And for anyone who's counting, yes, that puts them in the top 0.1% of Americans. And they paid about a 35% tax rate. Clinton's campaign took the opportunity to slam Trump for refusing to release his returns. According to the New York Times, Trump would be the first presidential candidate to not release tax documents since President Richard Nixon. But candidates are not required to make tax documents public. Trump has told the Associated Press that there's no reason to reveal his taxes because, quote, there's nothing to learn from them. However, some critics have argued that Trump isn't revealing his financials because they may be actually less than what he's been claiming publicly.
An arsonist has been convicted of starting brush fires in San Diego's East County and North County. Poway resident Jonathan Benjamin Cohen was found guilty by a jury on Friday of 5 counts of maliciously setting 5 wildland fires on forest lands in 2014 and 2015. According to a press release issued by Cal Fire, Cohen was responsible for lighting fires along Wildcat Canyon Road between Verona and Lakeside, also on Highway 67 just north of Lakeside and on Lake Wolford Road between Escondido and Valley Center. The investigation, which included surveillance operations, had officers from CAL FIRE, the Sheriff's Department Bomb Arson Unit, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service involved. CAL FIRE Captain Isaac Sanchez says Cohen could face up to 30 years in prison when he is sentenced on September 30th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. The City of La Mesa is seeking public input on its draft climate action plan. A climate action plan spells out how a jurisdiction, its residents, and businesses achieve specific reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. Two public meetings are planned with the city's Environmental Sustainability Commission on August 16th and September 19th. Both meetings will be held at 7 p.m. in council chambers at City Hall. Angela Deegan with SanDiego350.org, a nonprofit group dedicated to stopping climate change, states, "These are great opportunities for you and your neighbors to help shape the plan that will guide the City of La Mesa to a clean energy future over the next 20 years. The environmental group says La Mesa residents are needed to provide input and assure that La Mesa adopts a strong, enforceable climate action plan, which includes a goal of 100% clean energy and incentivizes renewable energy and local green jobs."
A horse that went missing in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park on August 7th has been found safe 6 days later. The horse named Royal became startled when its saddle slipped underneath. Royal ran off along Dyer Springs Trail, prompting an extensive week-long search. Volunteers from across the region helped comb the area for days, with hopes beginning to dim as temperatures soared to triple digits. But on Saturday, searchers handed pamphlets out to hikers, bikers, and runners in the area, and those efforts paid off. A runner spotted Royal drinking water at Dyer Spring. Chad Waldhauser, a volunteer searcher who was at the scene, said he believes Royal's tack became hung up on brush until the horse somehow managed to work its way out of the saddle and halter. He says he was able to put a halter on the missing horse and lead him out to safety. Royal was treated by a veterinarian for a gash on his leg, but otherwise appears to be in good health. Waldhauser offered a big shout-out of thanks to everyone who joined in the search last week, adding, "It's nice to know the horse community, along with hikers and backcountry runners, pulls together and tries to do what they can." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Gisato Iverson with information about a recall of meat products sold through retail outlets in California and other states. Al Shawbury Meat Incorporated is recalling meat and poultry products due to misbranding and undeclared allergens, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service has announced. Some of the product contain pistachio nut and soy, known allergens, which are not declared on the product label. Some products also included other ingredients not listed on the labels, such as red dyes in poultry meat and beef products. The Al Shawbury Meat Company specializes in production of halal meats for those of the Muslim faith. The recalled products include salami, bologna, mortadella, sausage, sujuk, and makanek meat. The beef bologna, beef salami, mortadella, and other sausage-like items were sold under the brand names Al Shabrawi products between January 1, 2015 and August 4, 2016. Consumers are urged to check their refrigerators and freezers, then discard these products or return them to the place of purchase.
San Diego Gas and Electric has unveiled the latest additions to its fire preparedness toolkit for this year, which includes the return of the Ericsson Skycrane Sunbird for the seventh straight year. The helitanker, which can hold over 2,600 gallons of water or fire suppressant and can get airborne in just 15 minutes, has already helped knock down two fast-moving brush fires just days after its arrival in San Diego on July 1st. Recently, SDG&E and the county renewed their joint contract that will ensure the Skycrane will be available through 2022 for regional fire suppression. The Skycrane is stationed at SDG&E's Aviation Services Facility at Gillespie Field in El Cajon and will stay through October this year or longer if fire conditions warrant. CAL FIRE Chief Tony Meacham calls the helitanker significant and welcome addition to our regional firefighting arsenal every year. He adds, "As we've seen already this summer, the air crane's quick response and decisive attack make a critical difference by stopping a wildfire before it has the chance to spread." Having the helitanker close by and available, if needed, provides an extra measure of insurance for our community. Carolyn Wynn, SDG&E's Chief Energy Delivery Officer, calls the Sky Crane a critical asset as part of the company's ongoing effort to enhance regional fire protection. She adds, "Recently, we developed a wildfire risk reduction model that will help us make smart, cost-effective decisions about infrastructure investments that can have the greatest impact on safety." To develop the wildfire risk reduction model, SDG&E looked at every component of its overhead electric system, not just power lines and poles, but switches, fuses, and crossarms, taking into account size and age, as well as the potential loss and replacement costs if a fire were to start. The model is based on tens of millions of computer simulations of fire ignitions and how they could spread based on various conditions. SDG&E is working on translating the model for operational use by factoring in weather conditions and fuel moisture data to fine-tune the risk forecast daily. At the request of local fire agencies, SDG&E has also added two additional weather stations to its network of more than 170, one in Mission Valley and another in southern Orange County, to improve awareness during extreme fire weather events in those communities. San Diego Fire Chief Brian Fennessy says, "This year, we're anticipating another year of higher fire activity fueled by a more abundant grass crop than we've seen in quite a while. Fire officials expect to see very volatile wildland fire conditions across the county this fall," the chief confirms. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The La Mesa Historical Society has opened an exhibit on Japanese-American students at Grossmont High School who were forced into internment camps during World War II. The exhibit was prepared by Grossmont High School AP History students. Groups of three or four students each chose one Japanese student who was interned. The students published a book with their findings, including some first-hand accounts of quotes from relatives of the internment camp survivors. The internments began in 1942, shortly after the December 7, 1941 bombing of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by the Japanese, and lasted until the war ended in 1945. It wasn't only immigrants who were rounded up. Even U.S. citizens and their children were forced into the camps. East County Magazine spoke with Donna Namir at the La Mesa Historical Society, who gave his historical context behind the internments, and later shared troubling memories from her own childhood of classmates locally who were interned. She explains,
"The United States was very, very afraid after Pearl Harbor was bombed, after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, that because we lived on the coast, that the Japanese here would give information to their ancestors or their relatives in Japan. So they didn't want them to be close to the coast. So they moved them inland."
The class project focused on seniors from the class of 1944. Looking at an exhibit of senior photos from the class of 44, the historian reflects,
"All of these people, except for one, were very, very active and were leaders at the school. He was the senior class president. He was very involved in the different clubs. There were athletes. One of them was a quarterback for the football team. They were all involved in either music, in sports, so they were really involved in their school and did a lot for the school as far as being leaders and wanting to go on to higher education, and so their aspirations and stuff were very high."
When the executive order was issued by President Franklin Roosevelt, each person was allowed to take just one suitcase. Eventually, they were allowed to receive mail, so family or friends could send them items. There was a school for the children and some activities as well as sewing machines to make things. Food was served cafeteria style. Some were allowed to leave and take jobs in the Midwest. The men could join the military, and many went to Europe to fight for the U.S., the country that had interned them and their families. Of those who went to war for our military, Nightmare reflects, the Japanese Americans wanted to prove that they were American, and that's partly why they fought. They did everything they could to prove that they were not the enemy. But some chose not to leave the camps, because they were afraid of anti-Japanese sentiments and did not know how they might be treated by people in the communities they had left. After the war, some came home to find that they had lost everything, their property seized by the government, their possessions all gone. Others were more fortunate and found that their friends or neighbors had taken care of their belongings, and some retained their properties. Nymir says her cousin told her about a high school principal at a local school who had students harvest strawberries at a farm owned by a man who was interned. She says they took care of the property, watered the plants, harvested them, and sold them, but they got the money. The Japanese American didn't. Despite all that they endured, the Japanese Americans did not fight against the internment orders. She says they continued to try to prove that they were good American citizens the whole time they were there. The modern-day student researchers at Grossmont developed an admiration for the Japanese-American students' strength and culture, Nymir adds. For Nymir, this project resonated personally. She was a student at Fallbrook High School when her Japanese-American classmates disappeared. She was shocked years later to learn that they, too, had been sent to internment camps. When her own Japanese-American childhood friend returned from the internment, she recalls,
actually, it's very interesting because I was in school. I was in first or second grade when all of this happened. And I knew that my Japanese friends were gone. But they never talked about it. We didn't know where they went. We didn't know, and being that young, I never really questioned it. And I think now it's becoming part of our history. But when I was in high school then, it was not, the internment camps were never talked about. And I never was aware of it until I started working with the Grossmont High School students and started doing research myself. Did I realize how extensive it was as an adult? So here I am 50 years, 75 years later, learning about this whole thing. And I think with prejudice and what the way we all feel about prejudice now, it's something that is very upsetting to me personally that it happened, that I had friends that went, and when they came back, they never talked about it. But they were very, the Japanese people that I went to school with were very withdrawn, and they never talked about it. So I never knew that it happened to them.
There was no compensation for those interned until years later, when Ronald Reagan was president. She draws parallels between past and present. Here are highlights of her remarks.
But I see it right now reoccurring with the Muslims. So it's not like, I think people need to understand that they were American, mm-hmm. with a Japanese heritage, and that they wanted to prove that they were American, and that's partly why they fought. They did everything they could to prove that they were not the enemy, the Japanese who bombed Pearl Harbor. But it's an interesting concept, and I see it happening now, and it upsets me now with what's going on. When some of them, even my own relatives, if they're Muslim, they're bad, and that's not true of any nationality.
We said never again after the internment of the Japanese, right. during World War II, and yet it looks like it could possibly happen
with what's going on right now in our politics, which is very, very upsetting to me. I've always had my opinions about politics and my opinions about who's running the government and my opinions about stuff, but I've never felt that it would really bother me. It would really affect me, my own self. I could still have my own beliefs and my own, but I'm beginning to think if we're going the direction it looks like we may be going, that some things could happen that are going to be very, very negative and very bad.
Now she hopes the exhibit will help teach others about the past. The exhibit will be on display at the La Mesa Historical Society at 8369 University Avenue, La Mesa, through at least September. The museum is open the second and fourth Saturday each month from 1 to 4 p.m. Reporting from East County Magazine on KNSJ This is Chisato Iverson.
Medical marijuana has been legal in California since 1996, but the Drug Enforcement Administration published its decision in the Federal Register to keep classifying it as an illegal drug under federal law. The move means cannabis will remain a Schedule I drug, the highest designation, the same as heroin. Dale Gehringer with the California chapter of the National Organization for Reforming Marijuana Laws thinks the DEA, as a law enforcement agency, shouldn't be responsible for decisions on how to classify drugs.
The DEA wants to continue its unjustified war on marijuana. They have a vested interest in doing so. And like any bureaucracy, they are trying to protect their own power.
The feds say there aren't enough well-executed studies to prove marijuana use is safe, and the DEA did move to facilitate more research by allowing more schools to grow the plants for study, which is good news for the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research at the University of California, San Diego. Gehringer thinks marijuana should be taken off the controlled substances list altogether, just like alcohol and tobacco. He says the feds were only considering a half measure and then rejected even that.
The measure that the DEA was considering, supposedly, was just rescheduling to Schedule II, putting marijuana on a level with opium and cocaine and methamphetamine, which are also in Schedule II, and they couldn't even do that much.
42 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized medical marijuana use. Californians will vote in November on whether to legalize it for recreational use. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we're going to be talking about the Helix Water District Board race, and I'm here with two candidates running for the board, Mark Grasick and Dan McMillan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now, I should add that we are taping this before the close of the filing deadline, and should more candidates qualify for the ballot, we will be inviting them onto the show, as well as the incumbents. Let's start with you, Dan. Can you tell us which district you're running in, and who the incumbent is, and what neighborhoods the district includes?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm running for Division Number 1. The present incumbent is John Linden. And the area is north of Highway 8, stretching from Pepper Drive west around to East Main. So it's all the Helix area north and east of Highway 8, between Pepper and East Main.
Very good. And Mark, how about your district?
Yes, Miriam. I'm running in District Number 3, and that includes all of Lemon Grove, most every part of Spring Valley, and a good piece of La Mesa, basically west of Spring Street out to the San Diego border.
Okay. And these two seats are currently occupied by Directors Muse and Linden, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. They're both seeking re-election. Now, I'd like to hear about your qualifications for office. Mark, I'll let you take this one first. Tell us about your experience and why you think you'd be a good member for the Helix Water Board.
Oh, thank you. Well, Miriam, I have a 20-year history of experience in the water industry. And currently, right now, for the last few years, I've been the reclaimed water manager and irrigation manager at MCAS Miramar at the air station. Mm-hmm. So I'm responsible for all the outdoor water use throughout the entire station. I have two relevant college degrees. I've lived in the district for over 20 years, so I know the district. And I think I'd be a very good fit because of that.
Dan, how about you? Tell us about your experience.
I, too, have approximately 20 years water experience, but that was sitting on boards. I've served as president of the Padre Dam Board. I've served on the San Diego County Water Authority as Padre's representative. I've also served as chair of the San Diego County Wastewater Management District. And for the last 4 years, I've served as a member of the San Miguel Fire Protection District Board of Directors. I have extensive knowledge and experience with special districts. The San Miguel Board, for example, is a non-enterprise district. It depends on taxes. The Helix Water District is an enterprise district, which means it depends on rates. And that's where the problem has been coming in, is the continuous rate raises. The directors have the right to raise the rates. After serving in the Marine Corps, I came back to San Diego State, got my master's in mathematics, and for 7 years I worked in the defense industry with a private contractor, both as a math modeler and a analyst. And during this time, I did receive my MBA in finance. Then I went into private business, and I have been a accountant and chief financial officer for a construction management and real estate corporation for the last years.
Okay, well, it sounds like we have two extremely well-qualified candidates running, listeners. I would like to ask each of you, Mark, we'll let you take this one first. What is your primary reason for running for public office and specifically for this board?
Well, that's a great question, Miriam. Thanks for asking. You know, I served in Lemon Grove in my community. I served for 8 years with the Lemon Grove School Board, and I was actually worked my way up to be chairman of the Proposition W Committee, and we actually oversaw the construction of the new library there in Lemon Grove, and it's a beautiful facility. Mm-hmm. And I'm really proud to say that we built that on schedule and on budget. And I served there for 8 years, so that really whetted my appetite for public service. And what happened was we had received notice of the pending rate increase, the hearing, in October of 2015 there at Helix Water.
Yeah.
So I attended that meeting.
A little bit controversial. There were about 200 angry ratepayers out there urging them to vote no on that, and the board voted for it anyway.
That's right. And so I was there that night and stayed till the end. The La Mesa PD were called out. There was a lot of angry people upset with the way things went mm-hmm. that night. So when I was leaving that night, and there were people congregating by the front doors and out in the parking lot, and I remember clearly one man said, well, you know, we're kind of helpless. What can we do? And I said, you know what? There is something we can do. And I said, I'm going to run for one of those seats on the board. And that's how it all started.
Okay.
I started looking into it, and here we are now.
Okay. Dan, how about you? What compelled you to run for this office?
Well, I've recently moved into the Helix Water District. It's still in East County. I moved across the road, and the boundaries changed. So I'm in the Helix Water District, and I, too, have a background in water, and I, too, attended the meeting October 7th, 2015, and I spoke at that meeting against the rate raise, especially the such a long-term rate raise for 5 years. Prop 218 was put into effect so that boards had to be responsible to the public. But by arbitrarily setting a rate raise of over 70% for the next 5 years, the board has slighted that intent of the law by not having to face the public for 5 years. And I just think mm-hmm. that's quite unfair.
I would like to go into a little bit of the background of rate increases in this district, even before the controversial one you mentioned last year. They've had a couple of them in prior years before that. I recall one where people were so upset that our headline at the time was, "We've been waterboarded," citizens say. They were upset about it. There was another where they voted in a rate increase without reading any of the letters from the public. We found this out, got a hold of them, and published them all, and pointed out there was a Brown Act violation for that. Staff had never given them the letters, and so they had to undo it, redo it, and they voted for it again. So then last year, as you've mentioned, they voted for the first time to approve a 5-year rate increase, not an automatic one, but giving the board the authority to vote for a rate increase for each of the next 5 years. And at the time, board member Kathleen Hedberg, who voted against that, by the way, she asked if there would be opportunities for public input on that. Would there still be hearings where the public would get to at least weigh in before they decided on a rate increase for each of these years? She was told they would, and then all of a sudden, this past month, something magically appeared on the agenda one day that they were going to be looking at a rate increase. They had a meeting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, no evening meetings like they've normally done in the past, no notice in the the bills that we all get, that we all pay. Full disclosure, I'm a Helix ratepayer also. And they simply voted with basically no public notice to raise the rate. And it was a 10.5, almost a 10.5%. 10.3. Yeah, it was a 10.3% increase, which is quite substantial. They actually were voting on two possible rate increases, and they chose the higher of the two. Mark, what do you think about the latest rate increase?
Well, you know, Miriam, you brought up some very good points. But I think, you know, when I'm out in the community listening to the ratepayers and their frustrations, the thing that people have a tough time getting their mind around is the fact that when the governor issued the drought declaration and asked everyone to conserve, all the ratepayers in Helix Water District did a great job. We saved around an average of 25% of water.
Yes.
So what the difference now with this rate, these last rate increases, is people have a tough time understanding how they used less water, they pitched in and helped out, and now they're getting hit with a rate increase.
Yes.
And I keep hearing this over and over again. And I think that's the big difference now, that people have a tough time understanding that.
Makes sense. Dan, how about you?
Yes, no, I was at the meeting and I spoke against it, and I also was at the meeting when they went up the 10.3%. I do want to note that Joel Scalzetti and Kathleen Hetberg did vote against the raise. My opponent, John Linden, and Mark's opponent, Chuck Muse, voted for the increase.
Yes, and so did Deanna Verbecki, who's not up for re-election this time around.
Correct. And like I said, that's a 70% over 5 years. They did say, well, it may go down, but this year they came back with the 10.3%. And as Mark mentioned, people are irritated that the fact is you're saving water, but your bill's going up. And when you have to less sales, you have to reduce costs. And we'll say a little more about that in a minute.
Out of respect for the board members that are not here, of course, it's easy to criticize. But their justification for the rate hike was that, ironically, because people did such a good job and conserved so much water as everyone was asked to do, that's a catch-22 for the district. It means that they are getting less water sold, therefore they're getting less revenues in the door. And so, you know, they still have to repair the pipes and do these things, and so their argument is they've got to raise the rates to make up for the lost revenue. So the question for you guys would be, if you're opposed to the rate hike, and apparently you are, how would you make sure that they don't get into a deficit situation? Do you have ideas for either raising revenues somewhere else or cutting some expenses?
Yes, this is Dan McMillan. I did want to clarify that John Linden also pointed out that by doing the 218 proposition vote for 5 years, it saved the cost of notification. Again, that was not the intent of 218 for a cost. It was to for boards and elected officials to have to come in front and face the public so that they would have to do this annually. And by going for 5 years, they certainly hurt it. Yes, your fixed costs tend to be covered by your meter charges. That's a fixed cost in everybody's water bill. Those that use very little or use a lot have about a $40 or $50 charge per month. And that is to should be to maintain the infrastructure. When your water sales go down, it's the general manager's problem and opportunity to cut costs. He has to cut back on his labor, and he has to cut back on other costs. And when they do say they lost $1 million, remember half of that million was cost of water from the San Diego County Water Authority. So they only lose $500,000. So they must cut back on costs. Another thing is that they have to look at, which they have not, they've used pay-go, which means you pay as you go on many of their construction projects. Financing is extremely cheap now, 2 to 3%. So for most financing of the infrastructure, they need to look at bond financing and also reducing staff levels as required. And we must look at the salaries. Remember, I said that the general manager, a very nice fellow, but he does make $60,000 more than the Department of Water Resources director for the state of California.
Wow.
And Helix is just not the same size as the state of California. So it certainly has problems, but if you think of the political and operational problems that the director of the state of California has, he has a lot of people beating on him.
Yeah, there you go. Mark, I'd like to let you get a word in here and answer the same question. How would you either raise revenue some other way or cut expenses in order to try to avoid a rate increase or perhaps even roll it back?
Well, Dan's brought up a few very good points here, and it is the general manager's obligation to look at the entire budget. And one thing that I noticed when going through the agenda and the meeting notes and the budget is the operating part of the budget hadn't been looked at to do any reductions there. And now that's what Dan's talking about there, your salaries, your health insurance, all these types. We're not talking about the capital expenditures.
Right.
We're not talking about the water purchases that are coming from outside.
No,
of the
and of course, I should get it here in all fairness to the board that some of those expenses are things that are in their labor contracts. You can't just necessarily say we're going to, you know, cut labor pay, at least not until the next contract period comes up. But apart from those items, where would you make the cuts?
Well, again, like we're talking about, we have to look at everything throughout there. The last meeting we were at, there was an agenda item for, I believe it was $400,000 for some new vehicles because they had reached 80,000 miles. And I can tell you, my daughter's a junior in college and her car has like twice that many miles on it. And so we need to look at all aspects of this with a fine-tooth comb. And we just can't say that one part of the budget is off limits to review or inspection.
Yeah, maybe you just fix the truck instead of replace it. I'd like to ask the two of you, if you're elected, would you commit to roll back, at least in part, this most recent rate hike? Is that doable?
I would certainly want to look at it, and I do pledge that I will push for and support a citizens' committee also to look at cost-cutting means. I would like to be able to cut back or roll back some of this raise. It seemed to be quite high at 10.3% when the cost of water was going up approximately 4% and inflation's been 2%. So there's some question why you can't get it back to 3 or 4% or maybe back to zero. So, yes, I would definitely look at that. And again, I support a citizens group to help with those cost cuts. And the other advantage of a citizens group, it helps support the directors when they are pushing some unpopular ideas, and cost cuts are unpopular.
Okay. Mark, how about you?
Again, Miriam, that's a really good point. So one of the things that I've pledged to do here when I'm talking and listening to people out in the community is to really examine this latest rate increase. And if it is possible to either freeze it or roll it back, I'd love to try to look into that and see if we can do that. And we're certainly not going to just go ahead and give a carte blanche for further rate increases without a thorough analysis of the budget. Like Dan pointed out, you know, our water cost was going up 4%, and there were actually two proposals. One was for an 8.5% increase, and the other was a 10.3.
Yes.
And ultimately, what was voted on was the 10.3, the higher of the scenarios. So those are the things that we're really going to have to scrutinize here going forward. And I can tell you, there's no more rubber stamp. There's no more carte blanche for any further rate increases once I'm on the board.
Yeah. And again, it's been, listeners, repeatedly, it's been 3-2 on this, with two opposed to these rate hikes and three voting for it. So one new voice on there, and maybe we'll have two after this election. That could really change. You know, I have to ask you, if the justification for these rate hikes was because people used less water, conserved, you know, invested in those water-saving sprinkling devices and showerheads and everything, is there a danger here that people are either going to just ignore that advice in the future, or that this becomes a vicious circle where if people keep using less, the rates keep going up? I mean, where does that end?
Wow, Miriam, that's such a good point, because, you know, my dad used to have a saying that he used to say, no good deed goes unpunished. So yeah. Everyone in the district conserved and cut back water. They did these irrigation, outdoor watering improvements, and yet their bills continue to go up and up and up. So maybe the next time, you know, could be the law of unintended consequences. Maybe mm-hmm. the next time that there's a drought declaration, people are going to figure this out, and they're just going to say, wait a minute, if I cut back and conserve, my bill's going to keep going up and up and up, and I'm not going to conserve. So there could be some blowback, an unintended consequence yeah. to these continued rates, especially if we're not explaining things well enough to the public.
Yeah, it could wind up with water waste. Dan, what do you think?
Well, we've talked about this. I've talked about it for many years on water boards, both at the County Water Authority and at PADRE. And it has to do with the elasticity of water. And when you had mentioned to board members that if you raise the rates too much, people are going to use less. And they always felt, no, there's no substitute. Well, there is a substitute. It's called brown lawns and pulling out your vegetation and letting your trees go brown. So there is a substitution factor, and it's come into play. And some people simply say it's a death spiral. The higher the rates, the less people use, so therefore you have to increase your rates again. And we need to prevent this. We need to stabilize the rate, and if we could hold it down so that people will use a reasonable amount of water and we can afford to operate the district.
It should be noted that in our area here, the Helix Water District, it includes the Mount Helix area, and the firefighters are warning us that this area has not burned in like 40 years or so, and they're really worried about if trees die and lawns die and people can't afford to replace them, especially the trees. It's very expensive. It can be thousands of dollars to have, you know, big trees taken out, that we could be actually inadvertently increasing the fire danger up here if water levels just get too expensive for people with, say, a big property, but maybe they're a senior on a fixed income, a widow or something. Are you concerned about increasing the fire danger with what we see going on with this board?
That's a very legitimate concern, Marion. Thank you for bringing that up. A lot of these beautiful trees throughout Mount Helix are large specimen trees that have well-established root systems, but they do need supplemental watering, especially during these long drought periods. So it's very important to look at your outdoor watering and your irrigation mm-hmm. upgrades. But as you said, Miriam, if some people, you know, on a fixed income, for example, can't continue, yeah, they're going to be having a lot of dead trees in their yards, and it also costs a lot of money to take those trees out. No one's going to come and do it for free. So it's a pretty bad catch-22 situation here. Mm-hmm. So we might have a public safety issue where we do need to help control these rates.
It could even force some people to just sell their homes. I have one friend in this district, and her comment was, they're just making it unaffordable to live here anymore.
Certainly, but the fire danger is real. You can see it. The foliage is drying out. And also, you drive around and you see a lot of brown lawns. So things that wouldn't burn before may burn in the next fire that sweeps through here.
Yeah. Yeah. As a former fire board official, I'm sure you're very aware of that danger.
Certainly.
Helix District has gotten a lot of criticism from many of the ratepayers, and I did read hundreds of these letters from people who were opposed. I did a public record search, and I actually read them all. One of the things that a lot of people complained about is that with what they call the tiered rate structure, you know, it sounds like a good idea. Okay, the lowest water users get the lowest rates, and the higher water users get the highest rates. But if you think about it, maybe somebody has a larger property. You can't just let everything die. Maybe you have, you know, eight people. Maybe you're taking care of grandma and grandpa, and you've got the extended family and the kids that have moved back in, you know. Do you think that there should be some differentiation in the rates based on either lot size, family size, or for that matter, income? You know, if it's a widow on a fixed income, should any of those folks be treated differently? Dan, let's start with you.
Yes, and I do have experience with that. We've looked at it and did it at PADRE Dam. It's called water budgeting. You go through and you look at the lot size and the number of people that are living in a house and see if they have any animals, and you allocate water by tier according to those factors. You arbitrarily do it. A computer can do much of it. There are private companies that have the ability to do it by looking at maps. And then you have a open period of 2 or 3 months where anybody can come in and appeal because there will be mistakes made.
Fascinating.
You'll look at a house and you'll expect that there's two people there and there may be eight people. So obviously they need a different water consumption, agenda and figure before they go into the next tier. So it's called water budgeting. The model's out there, and it can be adopted by any water district.
Very interesting. I know that's been brought out, and Helix has, for whatever reason, just refused to do that.
That's a great idea, Dan. You know, I'd really like to look into that. You know, once we're elected on the board, I think I could support something like that. We'd have staff take a look at it, and that sounds like a really good idea. Thanks for bringing that up.
Okay. I'd like to move on and talk about another issue now, and that's Lake Jennings. As background on this, a couple of years ago, the Helix District took back Lake Jennings from the county. It was losing money on it as a public resource, and the board was all set. They had three votes there. They were all set to shut down the lake and bar access to the public to this beautiful resource. And Joel Scalzitti, who was newly elected then, said, well, wait a minute, give me a year, let me form a committee. He'd been on Padre Dam, he'd seen all the good things they did out there with Santee Lakes to turn it into a revenue generator instead of a loss. And they agreed to do that, at least three of them did. And by a year later, the lake itself overall was actually making money or at a break even. The campgrounds were still losing a little bit, but not nearly as much. And it was, last I heard, it was pretty close to the break-even point for everything. And they started bringing in kayaks and, you know, doing some upgrades and doing some marketing. Nobody had ever bothered to tell people really the lake was there or that you could rent it out for facilities and things like that. So, but that is going to come up for another vote soon on whether to permanently keep the lake open or close it. So I'd like to ask the two of you what your views are on that. Will you commit to keep the lake open?
You know, Miriam, I'm all for being, you know, my son was a Boy Scout, I was a Boy Scout. We spent a lot of time outdoors, and Lake Jennings is a beautiful resource for the working families of our district. And I would certainly want to do my best to keep that open. There's been a concerted effort right now there with the teepees and the camping there,
yeah,
the kayaks, and you can bring your own in there. So there's been quite a turnaround, and maybe we're not quite there yet to profitability, but if we're breaking even, I would certainly support that as a good, beautiful resource for our families out in East County. I would stand for that.
Okay. How about you, Dan?
Yes, I would also support it. And I think Kathleen and Joel have done a great job of turning that project around. I sat on the Santee Lakes committee for many years, mm-hmm, as a director of Padre Dam. We went through the same things at one time. There was a concern that the lakes were losing and ratepayers should not have to pay for it, which makes sense. The people that use it should, but that got turned around. We voted and forced through. Staff wanted us to build four cabins. The directors, mm-hmm, pushed for 10. They have been highly utilized.
Yeah, they do weddings out there, everything.
Yes, the upgrades and to the solar. So if you look at that, you can see the type of background that you know, that I have in that. And I do encourage Joel, and I have, he and Kathleen, to market and push for improvements at Lake Jennings, because there is a real need for this recreational resource. And I want to mention that Joel got by osmosis much of his knowledge of lake management through his father, Augie Scalzetti, who is a great director at Padre Dam, and he served on the Santee Lakes Committee for many, many years.
Very good. One more issue. I'd like to start by saying that one thing that hasn't been a big problem in the Helix District has been water quality. For the most part, from what I understand, the tests are quite good out there. That's something that the district has gotten right overall. But just the last couple of weeks, the state came out with a report talking about very high mercury levels in fish in 150 reservoirs in California, including 10 in San Diego. Lake Jennings is one of them on that list. And the board tells me, the general manager, that the water is testing clean, but they don't really seem to see a need to go out and do any testing of the fish. So far, they haven't put any signs up, you know, to let people know this might be an issue. I guess it happens because some of the larger fish can eat smaller fish, and so you might have a minimal amount of mercury, but it gets concentrated going up the food chain. Do you have any concerns about this, and what ideas do you have to protect the public who like to fish from potentially getting mercury poisoning?
Well, as a person that believes in full transparency, minimally you need to put signage up, and then staff needs to look at this and to see how serious the problem is, and to make sure the public and the fishermen and fisherwomen are totally informed about what's happening there.
What I would do if I was elected, Miriam, was direct staff to look into this issue here, to shine a light on it and bring it to everyone's attention, like Dan was saying, and make sure that the fishermen and the families out there are informed about this, and we'll find out a little bit more about it. And if there is an issue, we'll act on it. We're going to look out for the public's best interest.
Thank you, Mark, for that. I'd like to ask each of you now who your major endorsements are that you're most proud of and would like our listeners to know about. Mark, let's start with you.
Well, Miriam, being from Lemon Grove and being a long, long time homeowner and resident there in Lemon Grove, my wife and I have been homeowners for 24 years. We raised our kids there, and that's in my district. I really feel that I know the community and the district well. I'm endorsed by 4 Lemon Grove school board members. I'm endorsed by 3 Lemon Grove City Council members and the mayor, Mayor Teresa Sessom. I've also been endorsed by a number of clubs throughout the area. And a very important organization that some people may have not heard about is the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association.
Oh, yes. And they've been really fighting against these rate increases for years and very frustrated on that whole thing.
They have. And I've actually met with them and gone through their endorsement process. And I'm proud to say that I've been endorsed by them. I'm also endorsed by the San Diego Environmental Action Club. So a number of organizations, my strength lies there in Lemon Grove with the people that I know, my friends and neighbors, mm-hmm. and I'm really looking forward to their support come Election Day.
Very good. And Dan, how about you?
Well, I'm very proud to be endorsed by the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association. They represent over 7,000 homeowners in the Helix Water District. Also, you can go on my website and see additional endorsements, but now I have some of the City Council of Santee, Virginia Hall will, and then 4 directors from the San Miguel Fire District and 1 director at this time from Padre Dam. So I appreciate all of those. I push for some endorsements, but again, I think that we have to go out and tell the public our story and spend our time seeing what their concerns are, which we know what they are very heavily,
yeah.
And that's the high water rates, and we'll move on from then.
Very good. Can each of you let our listeners know if they want more information about you or your candidacy, where they can find that?
Thanks,
Mark?
Miriam. You can go to my website, which is Mark, M-A-R-K, the number 4, HWD.org. That's Mark 4, HelixWaterDistrict.org. You can email me at Mark, M-A-R-K, 4, HelixWaterDistrict, HWD, at gmail.com. Or you can find me on Facebook. A lot of the younger people that are helping me out with my campaign are helping me out on Facebook, and it's a great tool to reach the community.
And that's Mark Gracyk, and it's spelled G-R-A-C-Y-K.
That's correct. And if you feel the need, you can also call me at 619-335-5473. I'll take your call, and I'd love to hear your ideas.
Very good. And how about you, Dan? What's the best way for listeners to reach you?
Okay, first I wanted just to mention that, yes, Helix does provide safe and reliable water, but the question is, what is the cost? And the cost has been ever-increasing water bills and brown lawns for us. And you can reach me if you want to control your water costs, elect Mark and I, and I'm can be reached at danforlowerrates.com. Or you can call me at 619-316-9836. We appreciate your support and your support for more reasonable costs and lower rates. Thank you.
Very good. I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign. That she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Senior Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Eberena with a public service announcement from San Diego Gas and Electric. SDG&E has issued a reminder to the public about the importance of calling 811 before you dig. Last year, nearly 283 natural gas lines were damaged by third-party contractors or residents digging, which is an increase from that same time period in 2014. Calling 811 or Underground Service Alert will help avoid possible injury or damage to hidden gas lines or service interruption. Scott Ferguson, Vice President of Gas Operations at SDG&E, states, "Damaging a natural gas line can pose a significant safety risk and disrupt natural gas service. We ask everyone, whether digging at a construction site or at their homes, to make a quick 811 phone call to Underground Service Alert to have utility-owned lines marked for free. Before digging, residents, business owners, and contractors should mark the proposed excavation area and call 811 at least 2 business days before the project is scheduled to begin. Underground Service Alert will contact all local utilities for free to have them locate and mark the underground lines, pipes, and cables they own. For more information about safe digging or to submit an online request, visit digalert.org. If you suspect a gas emergency or have questions regarding a gas odor or carbon monoxide, call SDG&E immediately at 800-411-7343. It's important to keep in mind that natural gas is flammable and that something as simple as a spark can serve as an ignition source. Use your sense of sight, hearing, and smell and any of the following signs to alert you to the presence of a gas leak. Look for the following: dirt or water being blown in the air, dead or dying vegetation over or near pipeline areas, a fire or explosion near a pipeline, exposed pipeline after an earthquake, fire, flood, or other disaster, and bubbles in puddles outdoors after a rain. You should listen for an unusual sound such as a hissing, whistling, or roaring sound near a pipeline, and you should smell for the distinctive odor of natural gas. However, although SDG&E adds a distinctive odor to natural gas to aid in the detection of leaks, you should not rely on your sense of smell alone to determine if you have a gas leak. For more safety information, visit sdge.com/safety.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show: Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.